issue is that there's obviously a very vigorous national debate about what role governments at all levels, including the federal government, ought to play in terms of regulating greenhouse gas emissions. And that's a perfectly legitimate debate. The problem that's happened here is that the president's administration and the president himself issued an executive order right from the start, which appears to be down in the weeds, but in fact is fundamental in putting its thumb on the scale of this debate, by requiring federal agencies to calculate what they call the social cost of greenhouse gas emissions. What that all boils down to is that the executive branch is now trying to impose a number, a formula, for putting a dollar amount on any decision by a federal agency not to regulate some type of activity that may have a greenhouse gas emission effect. So a decision not to further regulate vehicles would be viewed as costly. A decision not to regulate production agriculture or feedlots would be viewed as costly. And, of course, then the argument will be, well, because there's a high cost of not regulating in order to, quote-unquote, save money, it's necessary to regulate. So it really turns the whole system on its head. We don't think the president has that unilateral authority. We think it would have to be granted by Congress, and it has not been granted by Congress. So that's what we're challenging, and we'll see what the courts say as we go forward.
All right. And then something else going on, and I know, you know, with everything that happened with the election, and I know there's a lot of, you know, talk about different things and what can be controlled and what needs to be done, and you've joined a bipartisan or a hyper-partisan, sorry, coalition with 20 other state attorneys general with something about the federal election legislation violating constitutional election integrity.
Right. So, you know, there's that line out of The Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, that, you know, was used when the truth was finally discovered. And I think that's maybe apt here. You know, there's been so much yelling back and forth on the 2020 election, and did different states follow their own rules? Did different states violate the federal constitution on a factual level? Were there factual irregularities in some of the states? And, you know, folks have their own views on that. But meanwhile, while all that's going on, you've got this narrow majority in the U.S. House that is passing what they've called H.R. 1, which is really a kitchen sink sort of election law that tries to federalize elections in a way we've never seen before in this country. And there's a reason we've never seen it. It's because the Constitution doesn't permit it. The U.S. Constitution provides that states, and specifically the legislatures of states, determine, among other things, the manner of conducting federal elections for Congress, elections for president. And this real power grab by the slim majority in the U.S. House to disregard that constitutional language and instead say Congress knows best, they'll set the rules that every state has to follow on everything from mail-in ballots to the election day to runoff elections. We think it's simply a violation of the U.S. Constitution. So we've put folks on notice. I'm very hopeful that the U.S. Senate will not follow suit and pass the bill. But if they do, we're certainly prepared to challenge parts of it. In Kansas, our elections have run well. And I think the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, is pretty apt here. We have clean elections in Kansas. We have efficient and transparent elections in Kansas. And the last thing we need is for Congress to come in and require all of that to be discarded and a different system adopted.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I kind of look at this last election, and hopefully it's an outlier as far as we don't have next election, we don't have a pandemic going on where we have to see an increase in the mail-in ballots because people, you know, don't want to or can't get out. Hopefully that's not something that we have to worry about, you know, again in the future.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And you know, mail-in ballots are a great example. Kansas allows mail-in ballots with no excuse, and we've allowed that for a long while, and it works well. One of the reasons that we can have confidence in Kansas mail-in ballots is you still have to prove your identification. You got to put your driver's license number on there, state identification card number on there, as the case may be. just as if you'd gone to the polls and shown up and have to show your driver's license. That's one thing that this federal bill, if it were to become law, tries to eliminate. That there would be no ability for states under this proposed new federal law to require voter identification at the polls or voter identification, upon mailing in a mail ballot. The only quote-unquote identification would be signing and saying, well, I'm really John Smith, which is sort of no identification at all. So it just seems a solution in search of a problem, at least as far as Kansas is concerned.
All right. Now let's talk about this proposed constitutional amendment on legislative veto of executive orders and agency regulations. Now, this would be like, we're talking like the 27th Amendment to the Constitution, or is this something a little different than that? Because we haven't had an amendment in the Constitution in quite a bit of time.
Well, this would be a state constitutional
okay,
amendment
state constitution.
As opposed
gotcha,
to a
gotcha.
Federal constitutional okay. amendment were it adopted. And you know, we'll see how this discussion goes. Here's the concept. Way back in the Roosevelt years, when actually a guy from Independence, South Landon, who was our governor, became the Republican nominee for president in 1936. One of the big fault lines, the big debates in 1936, if you go back and read FDR's speeches and you read Landon's speeches, was over this new creature that now we would call the federal administrative state or the regulatory state. They didn't use those terms back then, but it was all of those alphabet soup agencies that were created during the New Deal that really aren't contemplated by the Constitution with its idea of three branches of government. In many ways, federal agencies have become a fourth branch of government, and they're so much more expansive now than they were back in the 1930s. But in any event, one of the concerns as this new branch of government was growing was, well, how do we keep a check and balance over it? Who's in charge of making sure that agencies don't misuse their power? And one of the answers that was adopted back then was this idea of a legislative veto, where Congress, in the federal system, could basically reject individual agency regulations and say, no, that's not the way you're supposed to use your regulatory power. We're the lawmakers, and we're telling you you can't do that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And it was in widespread use in the United States, both in the federal government and the state governments, until the early 1980s. When the U.S. Supreme Court first and then state Supreme Courts after that invalidated these legislative veto mechanisms and said that they violate the principle of separation of powers. After that happened, there were several states that said, that's fine, we accept that, but we think there's such an important tool in the era of the modern regulatory state, we're going to ask our voters if they want to amend our state constitutions and grant that power anyway, which of course can be done. That happened in about five or six states. And then for whatever reason, that movement came to an end. And our proposal now is simply to pick up the ball and run with it again, to ask Kansans if they would like to have what we used to have for many years before the court actions, the ability of the people's elected representatives in the legislature to say, with respect to particular agency regulations, that is not supposed to be the law in the state of Kansas. We think it's a good accountability tool and a discussion worth having.
All right. And well, this next thing we're going to talk about is, you know, something that in my time in Kansas, I've noticed that you really work hard to try to stop or try to, you know, help people out on. And that's stopping scams, whether it be phone call scams or, you know, email scams, whatever it may be. And we actually had a story this morning about a new phone scam going on in the area. But that is you helped return more than $3.9 million to scam victims so far.
Yeah, this is one specific enforcement action we took that I'm really proud of our team on this. We've got a great, hardworking group of folks in our Consumer Protection Division who live and breathe helping Kansans get back their money once they've been ripped off and avoid being ripped off in the first place. And this specific enforcement action, some years ago now, 3, 4, 5, we sued Western Union and basically accused that wire transfer company of being complicit in the use of its money wiring services by fraudsters and crooks to rip people off and have them wire the money to an offshore bank account or whatever. We had a variety of evidence that the company either knew about that and allowed it or turned a blind eye deliberately and didn't want to know. Either way, we held them accountable. And that lawsuit resulted in a settlement. The settlement resulted in Western Union agreeing to repay money to scam victims who had used Western Union to send the money to the crooks. So Western Union, they weren't the crooks, but they enabled the crooks, and they agreed to refund the victims essentially on behalf of the crooks, because most of the time we can't find these bad guys when they're offshore and the money's going away. We've now returned from that one settlement alone just under $4 million. It's a little over $3.9 million to Kansans, who lost money on everything from grandparent scams to IRS scams to you name it, the whole gamut, sent the money away by Western Union wire transfer, and now have their money back thanks to the settlement with Western Union. And many of those are smaller amounts of money, but some of them are big. I think the largest we returned, a fellow had lost about $60,000 that he'd wired away to crooks and fraudsters, and we were able to get that back for him. So it's very satisfying work, and I'm just really proud of our consumer team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's a big deal. Almost $4 million returned. Well, you know, said most of it was smaller amounts of money, but it definitely adds up. It almost $4 million. That's a lot of victims, unfortunately. And you know, the thing about these scams is it's feeding off of people's goodwill, and eventually we're gonna run into where people aren't gonna want to reach out and help people anymore because they're always gonna be worried that it's a scam.
Well, there's nothing that makes your blood boil more than knowing that some crook or fraudster is taking advantage of the good-hearted nature of Kansans, and maybe Kansans who are so good-hearted that they're very trusting. And so anything we can do to stop that is just, I call that our happy work at the Attorney General's office, because it just makes you feel good at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, In Your Corner Kansas is always a big resource that people can use to, you know, if they think that they've been the victim of a scam, or to look and see, you know, what are some of the scams going on in the area to be a lookout for. You just got to go to inyourcornerkansas.org.
Yeah, that's our consumer protection website, inyourcornerkansas.org, and I'd welcome anybody to take a look and feel free to use any information on there. There's lots of it. You can print it out. You can send it to others. You can just read it yourself. Our whole goal is to try to help equip people with information to avoid falling victim in the first place. That's the best outcome.
Absolutely. All right. Well, as we look to wrap up, anything you want to add before I let you go for this month?
Well, I just appreciate the opportunity to visit with everybody today. We'll look forward to doing it again in a month, and we'll just keep plowing ahead on what we do.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking some time. I know we had to move the interview this morning, so I appreciate you being flexible and wanting to get on for the month, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next month as well.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Thanks to Attorney General Derek Schmidt for taking some time to talk with us this morning. Appreciate it all. Had some great insight on things. Of course, they're doing a lot.